Good morning, everyone. My name is Linda Meeks, and I'm the Education Facilitator for the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. Today is our second series in our podcast, and our guest is once again Rachel LaPonce, who is the clinical manager at the network. Rachel did such a great job the first time that we asked her back to review another article for us. So, hi, Rachel. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, Linda. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for doing this for us. It's greatly appreciated. We welcome your thoughts and your wisdom. So it's fantastic that you could join us again. Rachel, before we get started, I know our article today is on advanced care planning and COPD, but just for the people listening, as a clinical manager and a nurse consultant for the network, could you just explain why one of our missions is to educate the public and caregivers and healthcare professionals on advanced care planning and why that's so important?
Sure. Well, essentially, advanced care planning is ensuring that you have delegated someone as that substitute decision maker to speak on your behalf when you're not able to. And it's also a big portion of that is sharing with that caregiver what your goals of care would be. What is a priority for you? What is important to you to have in the future when your needs are changing? And at each stage in, say, an illness trajectory, you know, what would be priorities and things that you would want someone to focus on to ensure that your quality of life is what you would want it to be? Advanced care planning is a great way to engage your loved ones, your family members into what is important for you to maintain your quality of life. It's a way of ensuring that there is not going to be as much chaos or uncertainty when decisions need to be made, and you're not able to contribute to that because you're going to be contributing to those conversations in advance to when they need to be made. So your family or your spokesperson is going to be well informed as to what your wishes are and can speak on your behalf without the stressors and the uncertainty of, am I making the right decision? Am I speaking for my loved one as they would want me to be speaking for them? And, you know, there's a huge push in the community to ensure that, you know, we're engaging in these conversations. We're normalizing death as part of the living experience, and having conversations in advance and putting plans in place and conversations in place doesn't expedite the dying process. It just allows us to be less stressed when we need to make those decisions and have plans in place so that, you know, we put those plans in place, put them on the shelf for when they're required, and then we take that file out or take those decisions out when they need to be spoken about.
Yes, thanks for that explanation. I just thought it was important to explain to the listeners. Maybe some of them might be newer graduate nurses or new to the field of hospice palliative care, about why advanced care planning is so important and how that's relevant to the article that you picked today. So could you just explain and introduce the journal article that you're going to actually review for us today?
Sounds good. So the article that I chose to speak about today is called Advanced Care Planning for Individuals with Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease, a Scoping Review of Literature. So for the purpose of speaking about this article, when I speak of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is a mouthful, I'm going to say COPD. This article was from June 20th. It's from the Journal of Pain and Symptom Management, and it's volume 59 of that journal. And the authors of the journal are Elaine Meehan, Tony Foley, Claire Kelly, Art Burgess Keller, Catherine Sweeney, Ruth Halley, Karen Dettering, Nicola Connolly, and these are a combination of different disciplines, physicians, PhDs, masters in science individuals. And I found it a very easy read and very straightforward, and really touched on the importance of incorporating advanced care planning into the health plan of those with COPD.
So I've been with the network for approximately a year, and during my time here, I've noticed that you actually love to do speaking engagements, presentations on COPD. So could you explain to us why you actually chose this article?
So when I was reviewing a number of articles and trying to pick one that I thought would be relevant and interesting for an audience to hear a little bit about, I chose this one because COPD is a chronic disease, and it's a chronic disease that can be considered a palliative diagnosis. And by that, I mean, you know, no curability to it. It's certainly manageable and treatable, and there's things that we can do to control the disease, but it's not something that ever goes away. The typical experience of those that have COPD is that they usually have a gradual worsening of their illness in the years before death. And during those years, they can have these acute exacerbations that can land them in hospital. And at any of those exacerbations, that acute illness could lead to death. It's all about the management and the treatment and the own individual and what their illness trajectory is really all about. So I felt it was important. This article talks about advanced care planning in this particular population of people. I think we can do a better job of addressing chronic illnesses as palliative diagnoses, and do a better job of recognizing when they are nearing end of life and when we should be introducing essential plans to make sure that they're looked after as best that they can be.
Yes, that's totally relevant, because I think sometimes medical staff, nursing staff, and so on, if they're not experienced with hospice palliative care, believe that cancer is the major illness. So it's great to have some education on chronic disease and hospice palliative care. So could you explain what the purpose of this article is?
Yes, so the objective of this study, this article, was to review and summarize a number of different literatures and what the current practice was around advanced care planning and COPD. So it was a literature review. They looked at many different studies and summarized the findings in relation to advanced care planning and COPD.
So was that an explanation of the method, Rachel, or is there a specific method that they actually used?
Yeah, they did use a very specific method. So they called it a scoping review of literature, and they did it through a certain framework. And the framework they used was the ARCSI and O'Malley framework. And it's just a way of conducting the research, conducting the survey of the literature, asking a specific question, dividing the studies up that are relatable to that question, and just a way of grouping it all together to be able to ascertain what really are the common findings, or maybe there aren't any common findings at all.
Okay, those are new study methods. I've never heard of those before, so that's interesting. And so we talked a little bit about what advanced care planning was at the beginning of the podcast. So could you maybe just tell us a little bit about what COPD actually is?
Of course. So COPD, or the long word is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is an umbrella term for multiple respiratory diseases. And bronchitis, chronic bronchitis, is included in that. Emphysema is included in that. Usually these diseases are caused by significant or prolonged exposure to tobacco smoke or biomass fuels. It's really an umbrella term.
Okay, so COPD is a common illness or chronic disease. Could you explain for us why we should consider this a palliative diagnosis?
So COPD is progressive and incurable, which is really why it should be considered a palliative diagnosis. Those affected by COPD typically, as I already said, typically experience gradual worsening of their illness over a number of years, with it getting progressive and progressively worse. They have multiple acute exacerbations over a number of years before death actually occurs. So it's chronic in nature, it's debilitating as it gets worse, or debilitating during these exacerbations as well. There's no curability for it. It's management and treatment, and to maintain someone's level of wellness. But because there's no cure for it, it really is considered a palliative diagnosis, because we know that palliative doesn't mean end of life. Palliative is something that doesn't have a cure to it.
So most of us know COPD as a common illness and would consider cancer a leading cause of death. Is COPD actually classified as a leading cause of death as well?
So it's estimated that over 300 million people have COPD worldwide. That is quite a lot. Although it's currently the third leading cause of death worldwide, it's predicted that it will be the leading cause of death within 15 years. COPD is associated with a high symptom burden, with poor physical, social, and emotional functioning compared to patients that have a cancer diagnosis. And it also, when those individuals that have COPD have a significant burden of healthcare costs, and they use the hospital system quite a lot.
So in your work, why would you say that it's actually so difficult to predict the prognosis of these people with COPD?
What makes it difficult is that the stages of COPD and the disease course vary from one person to another. So this makes it very challenging to predict someone's disease trajectory or their prognosis. It also makes it difficult to plan for acute exacerbations, because you never know when they're going to occur. So this is exactly why it makes it so challenging for individuals to wrap their head around this disease as something that gets worse, but it's also difficult for the care providers, the care team, to initiate different stages of treatment, different initiation of advanced care planning, because it's not as predictable as, say, what a cancer diagnosis would be.
At the beginning of the podcast, we talked about advanced care planning. And can you now explain why advanced care planning would be important for people with COPD?
So advanced care planning is particularly important and relevant to people with COPD, because these patients have chronic respiratory disease. There's evidence that suggests that advanced care planning for these individuals is very needed. COPD patients and advanced care planning seems to be not as addressed. It's not done as often or as well as it is done with patients who maybe have more of a predictable disease trajectory like cancer. It's not uncommon for advanced care planning discussions to occur during acute exacerbations when the patients are too ill or the caregivers are too ill-equipped to make well-informed decisions. So for those reasons, that's why it is so important to have a plan in place for patients that have COPD that is specific to addressing advanced care planning.
Okay, so while you were reviewing the article, did the article and the literature actually say what's important about advanced care planning and COPD? perhaps maybe you already explained that in your last question. I just wondered if they were a little bit more specific.
So I'll share then. So one of the articles that they elaborated on in the study was it's Jobarian et al. And so what they talked about or what they found was that advanced care planning remains uncommon due to the complexity and unpredictability of the disease and the course of the disease itself. There was some ambivalence among both patients and healthcare professionals to engage in advanced care planning. So they weren't totally sold on the idea of doing it or receiving it if they were the patients and families. Another study by Zwark et al. Investigated research findings related to the experience of advanced care planning and patients that had various life-limiting illnesses. And what they found was that the aspects of advanced care planning conversations were initially perceived as being unpleasant, and patients and families were concerned or didn't want to engage in them. They were found to be helpful later on, and the patients actually felt some readiness and benefit from the advanced care planning. So initially they were found to be apprehensive about it. And then afterwards, when they reflected back on those conversations, they found them to be very helpful.
And when I read this article through, I noticed that there were four things that the article seemed to want to speak to in regards to COPD and advanced care planning. Could you review that with us, please?
Sure. So the study did a scoping review of articles looking at four different things. So one of the things they were looking at or trying to get a little bit of information about was the attitudes of healthcare professionals on advanced care planning and COPD. They wanted to investigate a little bit about the barriers to doing advanced care planning for this population of patients. They also wanted to be able to see, are there some certain things that act as facilitators or that act as aids for doing advanced care planning for people with COPD? And they also looked at some specific transition points, we could call them, or the timing in which advanced care planning would be helpful. And they also wanted to see a little bit about what interventions can be used to help educate healthcare professionals on incorporating an advanced care planning routine into their practices.
Okay, so thank you, Rachel. We've discussed four things that the article actually focused on and spoke to. And could you explain what studies were involved in this review?
Sure. So the primary research study, so they used primary research studies in this review. So the articles that they incorporated into it were research studies, both qualitative and quantitative. And they had to focus on advanced care planning with patients with COPD. If they didn't, they weren't included in the study. So to be included, they also needed to be within the last 10 years. So the span of time was January 2009 to May 2019. So they didn't include anything that was outside of those timelines. In general, they included 28 studies. And six were cross-sectional, four were controlled trials, three were pre and post intervention studies, two were retrospective chart reviews, one was a mixed method observational study, and one of the 28 studies, out of the 28 studies, 16 were European, six were from the US, three from Australia, and two from Canada. So Yahoo Canada had two in there that was included in this review. So I always like to see that. And one was from New Zealand.
Right. It's very important when we see our colleagues doing studies that are important to us in our practice. Earlier, we talked just a little bit ago about the four focus items of the review in the article. So what was discussed regarding current practices and attitudes of healthcare professionals?
So what I found was that, or what I read, was that the attitudes of healthcare professionals and current practices around advanced care planning for individuals with COPD was explored in 5 qualitative studies and 4 cross-sectional studies. So participants of these studies included respiratory physicians, general practitioners, palliative care physicians, nurses. It also included allied health professionals, including physiotherapists. So in these studies, there was agreement among the healthcare professionals that advanced care planning should be incorporated into routine COPD management, so part of the plan of care for these individuals. Many studies found that this is not the case, though, in most settings. Health professionals reported finding that it's very difficult to discuss advanced care planning and end-of-life care issues with their patients that have COPD. And so they often would leave those topics unaddressed in this population. They found that the conversations tended to focus on the day-to-day symptom management, and information was often changed to soften the message when they were in those appointments with their COPD patient. The studies found that this approach to COPD management, where the focus was simply on day-to-day symptom management, had a negative impact for patients in this group of individuals. The studies also found that the absence of advanced care planning led to unprepared and distressing discussions around resuscitation during acute exacerbations when these people landed in hospital. The studies also found that generally individuals with COPD want to be given adequate information about their prognosis, about their disease, as soon as possible after they're diagnosed, so that they can be more involved with making informed decisions about their treatment.
So that's so relevant for us to know regarding the practices and attitudes of healthcare professionals, because one of the things that we do at the network is obviously educate on advanced care planning and its importance. So that in turn leads us to always being concerned about the overall experiences of care for COPD patients. Did the article actually mention what actually made a positive impact on the end of life decision making?
Yeah, they found that that there are certain transition points for early integration of palliative care and advanced care planning discussions. And they found that after a hospital admission, that was one of the transition points that was very helpful and had a positive impact on end of life decision making. They also found that another transition point that was increased frailty of the individual, if discussions around advanced care planning coincided with the recognition of that increased frailty, it also improved the value of the decisions and the value of the conversation. When the individual or the family had a positive attitude towards advanced care planning, when there was palliative healthcare discussions with their informal caregivers, that was also considered a transition point or an appropriate opportunity to engage in some advanced care planning discussions, and it was found to be positive.
So it's always pretty relevant to know when you can make a positive impact and when the best opportunity is to do that. But did the article mention what could possibly be the barriers so that people understand how to get around those?
Of course. A number of the studies looked at in this review explored with healthcare providers and the care teams, the factors that prevented or were some barriers to inhibiting advanced care planning discussions with their COPD patients. So the barriers that were most frequently identified in these studies by the healthcare professionals was uncertainty around the COPD prognosis. Other barriers included a lack of training for healthcare professionals and having advanced care planning discussions. They found there was variability over time in patients' wishes regarding their care, so this made it increasingly more difficult. A lack of established protocols for who's responsible for what in the advanced care planning discussions was also considered one of the barriers. They found that patients had difficulties deciding what type of care they wanted in the event of a worsening level of wellness. So this made it challenging. If there was a lack of family support, this was a barrier. When there were concerns about dashing the patient's hope, so if the team was worried about killing their hope, then there was that was found to be a bit of a barrier. And certainly lack of time and cultural issues and insufficient continuity of care between home and hospital also was found to be one of those factors that that was a barrier. I'll talk about this when I talk about some of the things that aid in it. It's not a barrier. It's something that makes it positive. Okay. So I'll hold on that thought.
Okay, so that'll take me into my next question that I wanted to ask you. On a day-to-day basis, when we're working together and with the team, we're always concerned and try and do early integration of advanced care planning for all hospice palliative care patients. But were there some transition points for early integration of advanced care planning for people with known COPD that the article actually pointed to?
Yeah, so I think I alluded to this a little bit already, probably when I talked about, you know, the specific transition points or opportunities that arise in an individual's illness trajectory when they have COPD that are really red flags or opportunities that alert us that we should be putting some plans in place and putting some advanced care planning conversations in the works. You know, one of the main things that they found was what was associated with a positive experience for these individuals was when these conversations occurred with sensitivity and was done by a care team member that had already been involved in their care. So versus someone that's known to them, someone that they trust is engaging in these conversations versus someone who is a complete stranger but who has come in because of the nature of what is going on at that point in time. So, you know, when it's sensitively done and done by something that they're someone that they're familiar with, that certainly helps. But as I said, those trigger points, those hospital admissions, the moments where there's increased frailty, when the patient and family are showing a positive attitude towards engaging in those conversations, those are really the opportunities that you want to use to your benefit, to the benefit of the patient and family, to ensure that they're adequately prepared and can engage in some of this planning piece.
So you and I, Rachel, often have a few laughs and giggles about nurses and technology and my use of technology. Is there a use for technology and is it valuable in promoting advanced care planning for people with COPD?
So in this article, they talked about the use of technology such as online decision aids, DVDs, and webinars. And what they found was that these were considered acceptable sources of information. They were useful and they were a positive way to encourage patients with COPD to engage in advanced care planning. So specifically, they mentioned one study that assessed the effectiveness of having reminders embedded in the EMR. So we know our care teams have electronic medical records, and this one study found that having embedded reminders in the medical record was an effective way to improve documentation.
So I just want to focus a little bit on people who actually have COPD. So what do these people who have this chronic illness see as a barrier to advanced care planning for themselves?
So I thought this was a really important feature that they had in this article, because a lot of times we talk about, you know, research and ideas from the care team perspective, from the physicians, from the nursing, from the allied health professionals, but it's important to really have an understanding or reflect on what the patient's perspective is. And so in this article, it talked about how the patient's perspective viewed that there are many barriers to engaging in advanced care planning. And so they use three qualitative studies and one cross-sectional study to speak about this. And what they generally found was that participants in one study expressed frustration that they were not given enough information about their condition and prognosis, and that they are not involved in decisions about their treatment, which they felt negatively impact their ability to engage in advanced care planning. They also mentioned the inflexible forms that focus on documentation that's on fixed decisions about future care rather than a focus on goals of care, which are more fluent and ever-changing and more conversation pieces versus a fixed form. This also was found to prevent patients from engaging in their advanced care planning processes. They mentioned that hospital admissions and discharge after acute exacerbations was considered by patients and carers to be a chaotic time and not conducive to sensitive and meaningful advanced care planning discussions. So because they're alerting us to this, you know, we need to really think about that and incorporate that into our planning to ensure that we're not using hospital admissions and after discharge as those opportunities that we previously thought were possibly the best times to engage in advanced care planning. But they've also said here that for some individuals with COPD, family involvement in the advanced care planning process is very important, but the key is having a well-informed healthcare professional that's familiar with the patient and their history, such as their general practitioner. So I mentioned this as one of the things that help facilitate advanced care planning, you know, that piece around knowing your care provider. And that's why it's so very important to have primary care providers engaging in palliative care, that palliative care approach, because they know their patients. They know them from the time that they're diagnosed. They can continue to follow them as their diseases change and engage in these very important conversations that patients are here saying, you know, I'd prefer to have this conversation with my family practitioner because they know me best.
That's so totally relevant. And at the network, we champion advanced care planning and discussions on advanced care planning. And we know that the timing of those discussions is very important. And we've actually mentioned that already, but could you actually expand on that for us?
Sure. So when the article talked a little bit about the specifics of the timing of advanced care planning discussions, what they said was, healthcare professionals frequently reported that advanced care planning discussions with individuals with COPD often occurred after an acute exacerbation. So this is a very well-known fact. We use that as one of the red flags and those aha moments. Oh my goodness, we need to start having some plans in place because this is getting to be a tricky sort of situation. However, they acknowledge that this is not the most appropriate time for such discussions to take place. And we also heard this validated by what the patient said about the timing of these events. So it was apparent that there was no general consensus about the appropriate time to introduce. So this doesn't give us an answer as to when is the appropriate time for discussions around palliative care, around advanced care planning for individuals with COPD. It varies within all settings. So it varies in the community, it varies in acute care. In one study of 256 respiratory physicians, the criteria used to identify the palliative stage of COPD included repeated hospital admissions, the feelings and experience of the physician, so their personal experience, their knowledge base, and the wishes of the patient and the presence of severe comorbidities if they had high CO2 levels, if they had been on ventilation during hospitalization, if they were hypoxic, if they had unplanned weight loss. So those numerous factors that I mentioned there are some of the other factors, the other red flag things that could be what can alert us as to we need to be having these advanced care planning conversations. So not necessarily just those hospital admissions, those frequent exacerbations, but, you know, are they having unplanned weight loss? Is the family bringing up these topics? If they are, let's engage on those in those conversations. Do they have the presence of other chronic conditions that are impacting their overall level of wellness? Are they more hypoxic than they were before? So all of these sort of things we need to take into consideration.
Right. And I love that phrase that you used, engaging in conversations. And I mentioned earlier that you had a special interest in caring for people who have COPD. So when you reviewed this article, was there anything that rang true for you regarding the actual timing of advanced care planning for people with COPD?
What I found interesting was that multiple studies, or many of the studies here, included patients with COPD as participants. So found that they expressed a desire for more discussions about how the disease was likely to progress. So previous to reading this, I you know, tended to kind of go with what people were generally saying, and, you know, don't give up more information, or, you know, give them little bits, you know, don't overwhelm them at the onset. But what they've actually found was that many of these studies reported that that individuals wanted more discussion about the progress of their disease and what their future looked like right from the onset. And some wanted advanced care planning topics to be introduced as soon as possible at the time of diagnosis. So this kind of contradicts what we previously thought. In one qualitative study, the participants expressed discomfort with the idea of making binding decisions. And so when we talk about goals of care discussions, we're not talking about binding decisions, we're talking about conversations. And so at this moment in time, you know, this is what is a priority for me. And these are ever fluent, ever changing. It also talks about, while welcoming more advanced care planning discussions, participants expressed a desire for preference to be able to revisit and review what they've decided, their care plan. So that's sort of what I mentioned about the fluency of the plan. So it's not a binding contract. You're not making a decision that's going to never be able to be altered. You're going to have these discussions, and at this point in time, this is a priority. And they want to be able to know that they can alter, revisit, review at any appropriate time they see fit what their plans are. For one group in this study, they found that advanced care planning discussions were around the management of their COPD led to an overall positive experience of the entire advanced care planning process altogether. So that's very positive. Another qualitative study with patients found the period of time around hospitalizations and acute exacerbations was not the most appropriate time to initiate advanced care planning, but patients did acknowledge that it is one of those red flags, one of those milestone sort of things that could lead to the discussions. So they didn't want to have them right at that moment in time because they were too overwhelmed with everything that was going on at that point in time, but did acknowledge that, yes, that is an opportunity, a milestone, so that after they're back, or after they're more suitably in a better position mentally to be able to engage in those conversations, that was an appropriate time. It was mentioned too that the context and timing of advanced care planning discussions with individuals with COPD, as I said, needs to be sensitive and individually tailored, they say.
That information is so relevant to our practice. So as you're reading through that, you notice that there was a certain way that perhaps we practiced before, and that how important it is at the timing of these discussions for people for advanced care planning, and what has rang true for you. Was there actually anything that surprised you from the article?
Yeah, so over the years, you know, we've heard of different quality improvement programs and things like that, and aids that we use within our electronic medical record that are going to trigger us to do certain tasks and things like that. And so what I found surprising was in this article, they mentioned that physician education and reminders in the EMR on counseling and discussing advanced care planning directives on its own had very little impact on improving advanced care planning documentation. And so I found this to be a little bit surprising, because I always thought that, you know, having that little reminder that pops up in the EMR when that person comes in to see you in your office, you know, was something that was going to positively, you know, reinforce the idea of doing that. But that in itself was not enough to make a big difference. So what they found was, though, that if the EMR has a dedicated section for advanced directives documentation, so instead of just giving you that cue to do the documentation and you document in the regular narrative, what they're saying is more of a dedicated section on advanced directives documentation had more of an impact and was more easily accessible for physicians and the care team. And it was part of that permanent medical record, and it improved the documentation rates for the team that was being studied.
Well, that would certainly be interesting for our nurse consultants who visit hospitals and work on the electronic medical record to see if that actually is the case. That would be very interesting.
And I personally, not that I have a lot of experience, but, you know, the few experiences in the different EMRs that I've come in contact with, it was more just a tick sheet and did you do it? Yes, I did. Versus having it in, you know, in like a little tab or a file in itself, which was the advanced directive documentation section. Certainly there's other sections in other EMRs that provide the resources for being able to do that. But the documentation itself was more in the narrative, the general narrative, versus in a specific folder in itself. So I thought that was an interesting concept that maybe we could consider, you know, as future learning.
That's totally relevant to everyday practice. So it would be very interesting. So we have just a few more minutes in our time together. So could you summarize a bit more of the key points of the actual article?
Sure. So I feel like a bit of a broken record here, but really I can't, you know, really solidify some of this information enough. So, you know, I'll just, you know, say a few of the key findings. So, you know, really, there is widespread agreement among both healthcare professionals and patients with COPD and their caregivers that advanced care planning should be incorporated into routine COPD management, so into their care plan. One of the main barriers to this, the studies found, to its successful implementation was identified as being the uncertainty around COPD prognosis. And the associated difficulties because of that in identifying when is the most appropriate time to have advanced care planning discussions with their patients. The occurrence of repeated episodes of acute exacerbations, hospital admissions was identified to be a good transition point or criteria that could be considered an opportunity to identify the palliative stage of COPD and initiate some advanced care planning conversations. And this may be useful information for healthcare professionals who have patients with COPD. So when you know, when you're in the when your patient lands in hospital and you get that discharge report about how they were in hospital, and then within a month's time you're getting another report that your patient had been in hospital for the very same reason, you know, that's the red flag to call them in and revisit some of those advanced care planning directives, and let's have a conversation of where we've been and where we need to be and what is a priority for you. Among some of the other findings, they found that most people are open to the concept of advanced care planning, but it should be an ongoing conversation. As we know, it's just a one, it's not just a one-time only conversation, and the discussion needs to be sensitive and individually tailored. There are health behavior models that can be useful in determining when is the best time for health evaluation. The one model that was mentioned in this study is called the trans-theoretical model by Nagaya et al. And it described when advanced care planning should be applied to patients with COPD. So when advanced care planning in this population is useful. So in using this tool, they determined that the readiness of patients with COPD for engaging in advanced care planning through to their illness progression was helpful to know, so that the discussions could be effectively timed. So it's this model helped have a better understanding of when the patient was going to be ready to engage in these conversations. So they found that there's four stages of decision-making, or four stages of being ready. So the first stage they felt was the stage one, and that's before being ready to think about any advanced care planning. Then stage two was the discussion stage, where you'd introduce the topic. Then stage three was, you know, discuss what wishes are. And then stage four was the maintenance stage. So that's about revisiting decisions that have already been made and reflecting back on it. So, you know, they do mention in here a number of health behavior models in order to be able to understand patients and their families better to be able to engage in these discussions. So it's not necessarily all about recognizing those red flags and engaging in those conversations at that point, but also picking up on the cues of patients and families when they're ideally ready to start engaging in them, not just focusing on the illness trajectory itself. They also, a couple things they've said here is, in order to be able to make a change, a cultural change in many healthcare settings, you know, you have to have buy-in from the individuals. And so there needs to be, you know, an ability to be able to have the organizations as a whole understand the concept and understand the value of it, in order to be able to make the shift, make that cultural change within the organization to make a true difference in these programs rolling out. Healthcare professionals reported they feel frustrated at times with the fact that outpatient consultations were taken up with addressing acute health concerns, and it left sometimes little time to discuss the preferences for future healthcare. So, you know, some of those frustrations, knowing some of those, can allow us to focus on some of the cultural changes. Can we provide a little more opportunity, a little bit longer consults for these individuals that require some of this advanced care planning at their visits, not just the focus on their day-to-day symptom management? You know, it is the role of healthcare providers and professionals to create an environment of openness so that patients feel comfortable in order to voice their concerns regarding their end-of-life issues. They want to be involved in their care planning, so we need to be able to promote a culture and a safe space in order for them to be able to do this.
That's so much information, Rachel, and you have done an absolutely fantastic job of breaking down that article so that people can understand it. I think it's totally relevant to our everyday practice and for all other healthcare professionals who take care of patients with COPD. So perhaps sometime at a point in the future, we might be able to do a workshop on this because I think it's very important and pertains to everyone taking care of these patients. So I'd like to thank you so much for doing this for us today, and we'll see you again, I'm sure, sometime soon.